Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, warriors of all ages, from all things and all the different branches. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, Veterans Day was this past week, and we're pre-recording on Wednesdays now. But yesterday was Veterans Day, and for me, it turned into be a nightmare. I went to a Champaign County Rifle Club meeting, and at the meeting, all of a sudden, they're showing slides and clips from the war, and lo and behold, Jerry Weed showed up. Now, Denise, you're familiar with Jerry Weed, aren't you?
Well, why don't you go through it and tell them what happened on the air today?
And hello, Tui. I'm envoy. It's Patricia Axelrod, and I conduct the Desert Storm Think Tank and All Veterans Advocates. So tell those who don't know who he is, who this man is.
Okay, Jerry Weed was on a Bradley fighting vehicle during Desert Storm. And what had happened with Jerry Weed is that an Abrams tank, the gunner got nuts or crazy or mistook him, and he shot Jerry's Bradley fighting vehicle up with 320-millimeter depleted uranium rounds. One round came up through the basket area where the driver was and where Jerry was, and Jerry had DU shrapnel into him. You know, obviously he survived, but didn't get his medical care. The driver was killed almost instantaneously because a round came through his shoulder, entered in his right shoulder, and then exited across and then splattered him all off the driver's compartment. This is probably one of the most famous photographs that's ever been taken in Desert Storm, because what it shows, Jerry Weed's crew, and they're just getting into a helicopter, a Black Hawk, for medical evacuation, and Jerry's buddy has just realized, he's got his arm in a sling, and he's just realized that they were hit by friendly fire. And so he's crying. Well, all of a sudden, we're sitting there at the meeting last night, and they're coming out honoring veterans. We put together all the flags for our Vietnam, the Veterans Regional Veterans Memorial. I was there on behalf of that, plus attending the meeting. And all of a sudden, here's Jerry's crew up there on a picture being flashed on. Well, for me, it turned into an absolute nightmare, and I didn't sleep much last night. Flashbacks have been absolutely horrible. Because although we absolutely set up Jerry's medical care with his commander at that time, and Colonel Tom Little and Colonel Andres Corney-Both, Denise, you know them real well.
Exactly.
And I think, Patricia, you might have met them before, too. But they set up his medical care, and Jerry never got it. So when he finally did get into the DU medical program out at Baltimore under Dr. Melissa McDermott, Jerry already had cancer by that time, and he had a tumor.
How much time had elapsed?
When Kilpatrick and Daxson said, well, Jerry, the tumor we just took out of your shoulder that had the DU embedded in it wasn't caused by the DU, it was embedded in the tumor. Do you remember that, Denise?
Yes, I remember.
Horrifying.
Now, Doug, was he one of the... I know that the VA has done only the most cursory, as you and I, we all know, studies of radioactive weaponry. Let's get it straight and call it what it is, radioactive weaponry. Let's not call it depleted uranium anymore, because we're just playing into their game. But was he one of the very few people that they claimed to have no response or reaction from direct contact from DU, from radioactive weaponry shrapnel, Doug?
Absolutely. Jerry was
right.
Jerry had shrapnel in him immediately, and so we tried to set up his medical care. And then when we wrote the United States Army Environmental Policy Institute report in 94 and 95, again we discussed Jerry and tried to get Jerry's medical care. And I don't know, Jerry come to you, Denise, and you got him to me, or I'm not sure how that all happened, but both you and I got involved with Jerry when he was in a crisis mode, because his father was a scientist, and he brought a Geiger counter home, and the shrapnel was working its way out of Jerry's body, and somehow his dad got it and said, well, I'm going to check it for radiation. It came up hotter than blue blazes.
So he ran a Geiger counter against him, and he was hot?
Denise, isn't that what happened? They got the shrapnel out, and his dad ran the Geiger counter on it, right?
Right, correct.
But did they run it on, did the father-in-law or the father run it on his body while the shrapnel was still in?
Oh, yeah, he was hot.
Yeah.
Jerry was definitely hot, because we've got to remember the DU shrapnel, the emissions are at 300 millirems an hour of beta and gamma. And when we look at the alpha counts, it's in tens of thousands of alpha counts per minute. But I remember we were up at the meeting, and Denise and I were right there, and Mikey Kilpatrick was there, Colonel Eric Daxson, Colonel Bob Cherry, all these guys. And they're absolutely disavowing any connection with it. And Jerry literally still had the sutures in his shoulder from when the tumor had just been removed a few days ago, before this meeting, and they're denying any correlation. Now, this is one of the first time. Wasn't this where Bernie Sanders got that big award, too, or Chris Shays?
Yes, it was.
So that was when both Bernie Sanders and Chris Shays came out of the woodwork to do incredible work for the veterans, and Bernie Sanders continues to do that on a daily basis, as far as I know, doesn't he?
He does.
Yes, I think he does. But you know what? Nothing has changed. Let's get this straight for the benefit of anyone who's listening. The cameras have basically turned away. The Klieg lights are off. And nothing has changed. Let me make that perfectly clear. I heard of a veteran who wanted an MRI just of his knee and couldn't get it done. Nothing has changed. No changes have officially been implemented. But what might really help, and Denise, I don't know if you've heard of this or if Doug has heard of this, what really might help is that a new ruling has just come down in the Ninth Circuit that is citing the VA's unchecked incompetence. And this is arising out of the lawsuit that was filed some time back, whereupon a veterans group asked the court to rule on the treatment of veterans for PTSD. And they were, this group, and I know I'll think of it in a minute, and I know you know of it too, this group asked the court to order the VA to essentially implement their own regulations, and the circuit court found against them and decided that they could not rule, but they appealed it and they took it to the Ninth Circuit. And lo and behold, this is like a gift to the veterans. The Ninth Circuit, which includes California, has ruled against the VA, and it's ordering the VA to implement their own regulations for suicide prevention and for the treatment of PTSD. They are ordering them to address the systemic denial of care, which is, of course, inclusive of the suicide counselors at 800 outpatient clinics. And the judge said, and this is an exact quote from him, he says, "We did not reach this answer lightly. We would have preferred Congress or the President to have remedied the VA's egregious problems without our intervention when evidence of the Department's harmful shortcomings and its failure to properly address the needs of our veterans first came to light. Had Congress taken the requisite action and rendered this case unnecessary, even while it was pending before us, we would have been happy to terminate the proceedings and enter an order of dismissal. When the government harms its veterans by the deprivation at issue here, we are, and veterans are entitled to turn to the court for relief." So this is terrific.
Now, I think if I remember right, Denise, wasn't Paul Sullivan and...
Yes, Paul Sullivan was part of that.
They were totally
That's
involved
correct.
In those lawsuits and getting a startup, and Steve Robertson was instrumental, wasn't he?
Yes, both of them, Paul Sullivan and Steve Robertson, were
And it was, let me see what the team was called, and we all know it, it's just escaping me, but it was, as an aside, now you're all going to chuckle over this, I'm sure, anybody who's listening to this, you may or you may not know that President George W. Bush, you know, there was his father, Mr. Bush, and then there was George W. Bush, a man I refer to as the ugly shrub. Upon leaving office 2 years ago, you're going to chuckle over this one, touted his accomplishments during his tenure as president, boasting that he had provided unprecedented resources for veterans. Can you believe that? And that he had increased the benefits. This is a direct quote from him. "Increase the benefits available to those who have served our nation and transformed the veterans' health care system to better serve those who had sacrificed for our freedoms.
You know, that's part of the thing that comes on down, because Denise and I were both, and Patricia, this is before we all got together, really working a lot. But Denise and I, we were working with Chris Shays and Bernie Sanders, and then from that thing, and Denise helped set this up, we went up on Veterans Day of 2000 and did the breakfast up there for the coalition in the U.S. Senate. And at that time, we were working with George Bush Jr. because we'd seen all the problems, and we thought he was going to come around and help us. But then, just like everything else, that all fell apart. And I remember Denise was upset, and Tom was upset, and Adrian was upset. And wasn't that time we were out there, was it in front of Lincoln Memorial when Mikey Kilpatrick and those guys had a helicopter flying, taking our pictures?
Well, I'm not sure who was in the helicopter, but there was a helicopter that flew over, but that happens a lot up in D.C.
Yeah.
And let me just be sure that these folks get the credit they deserve. The people who brought the litigation were the Veterans for Common Sense and Veterans United for Truth. So those are the folks who had the wherewithal, and I know that it was pro bono litigation. There was a firm out of
California
who was good enough to litigate this. So I want to be sure that the that those folks are given the appropriate credit for them, and kudos to them. Praise the Lord and pass the mashed potatoes. This is a terrific, terrific ruling. But the bottom line is this: what will come of it? Because in order to affect this ruling, what is going to have to happen is each and every one of the VAs is going to have to be independently monitored. And when, in fact, it comes to pass that one of these centers, a physician, a VA, whomever it is, does not act in accordance to the court's ruling, somebody then is going to have to bring the VA back before the courts for contempt of court. So there will be, that's what's going to really have to happen, I feel fairly confident, before anything has happened or anything changes. Because we all know that they're still acting, regardless of all of the ballyhoo, regardless of the legislation. We all three know that the incentive, the bonus incentive, is still in place, that doctors, physicians, and directors of facilities and administrators and so forth will still receive a bonus. And for those who don't understand what that is, let me explain that very briefly. Each facility, each VA facility, gets a certain amount of money. They submit a budget, and they receive a certain amount of money. Any percentage, any monies that they do not spend from that budget, they are allowed to divvy up amongst themselves. So they are incentivized to deny care. And unfortunately, that has not changed.
You know, when we look at the problems, and I had the problem a few weeks ago, because thank God my primary care physician that I had at the Danville VA is history now. He's been sent packing, made a lot of people happy. Rollo's happy as a pig in mud. My cousin, Mike Fiedler, is happy as a pig in mud. I'm happy as a pig in mud. But then he referred me to a neurologist, and this neurologist, when I handed out the physician's guidance that we've all had and we've been working with, and Congressman Davis is sending out all over the nation, showed it to him and said, here are the physiological problems that I'm having. I need help with this. And he just poo-pooed that away as if that District Vision 11 guidance didn't mean anything. But then when I pointed out,
what Division 11 guidance is,
the uranium, these are the physiological effects, and this is what I'm having right now that I'm here for care. And he said literally nobody had any exposure to depleted uranium. There was no adverse health effects from anything. And I looked at him, and I said, do you have any idea who I am? Did you look at my medical records? And then he just kept getting madder and madder, because then I brought up the incredible work that Dr. Meehan Lee has been doing in Washington, D.C. And every time I said, well, Meehan Lee found this, Meehan Lee recommended this, he's getting madder and madder at me. And what he was thinking is I was saying that me, Doug Rocky, and Dr. Lee had found this. And he just totally disregarded me and Lee's recommendations and findings, even though they were right there in the medical records. And then when I was working with another guy here on Monday, just a couple days ago, this is a Vietnam-era veteran, totally exposed, all the stuff. He was aircraft pilot, he medevac, did all this stuff, and everything else. So he got super exposed. Well, he's got severe Parkinson's. And right now, Parkinson is presumptive, connected with Agent Orange and the pesticides. But they're still trying to get the disability. So for the Vietnam veteran, i.e., with Agent Orange exposures with known health effects, presumption for Parkinson's, they're still denying the care.
Exactly. And what this is going to take is, you know, it is more than likely... Now, I might add, you understand, of course, that that an act of Congress has been passed that would allow for Parkinson's to be considered presumptively caused by exposure to Agent Orange. And, of course, you folks know, and if you don't, there was also an Agent White and an Agent Brown. But essentially... The bottom line is that there was, in fact, an act of Congress. Unfortunately, what this is going to have to take is, once again, litigation, which brings me to a principal thesis of mine. The bottom line, in my mind, is that the VA, the Veterans Affairs, is so broken, so corrupt, so filled with people who have spent their entire history of employment with the VA denying care and essentially are wholly contemptuous of the VA. It is my opinion, I mean of a veteran who is coming for care, it is my opinion that it is time to abolish, absolutely abolish the VA and allow our veterans to receive health care just like our Medicare patients do. This is too broken. I can assure you, as you folks know, I am a veteran advocate, and as an aside, I have been doing this since 1992. Or actually, I started up in 91. Actually, I started in I've been going longer than that. But at any rate, with that said, I know that what I'm doing every day is I am going face-to-face, mano-a-mano, so to speak, with people in the VA. And that'll be over the phone or it'll be face-to-face. I work with folks all over the country, just as you folks do, just as you do, Doug. And I'm telling you that, by and large, the greatest number of people that I speak to within the system are wholly contemptuous of their veteran clients and are still locked into a mode that they believe they can function with total impunity and that they can do whatever they choose to. It is so corrupt, it needs to be abolished.
Now, Patricia, you just let me know right before we came on to start pre-recording, you set up a thing that is going to be a massive benefit for everybody on Warrior Connection. You set up where we're going to have one of the senior lawyers going after the VA on our show in a couple of weeks, correct?
That's right. We surely are. And actually, the name of the program is Sue the Suckers. So what we want to do is give veterans the means and ways and as much instruction as we can about how and why the VA can be sued, and they can be. Sadly, there are some drawbacks, and that is that litigation, when it is brought against the VA, is brought under the Federal Tort Claim Act, and that has some built-in restrictions. But we'll discuss that on the next program, or on that program. But I want everyone who can hear this to be sure to listen to our program in the last week of November, because we're going to have a person on, an attorney, who is expert at suing the VA, and we want to make sure that everybody knows this can be done. and
now,
should
be done.
One of the
things that happened recently, and I know all of us got involved, and Patricia, you got horribly involved, was a Vietnam veteran that started having the cardiac problems, which are now presumptive for Agent Orange. And this was up at the Great Lakes Navy Base.
He died in the parking lot.
And can you explain what happened there, Patricia?
Oh, what a tragedy this was. This is a Vietnam veteran who was ill. He had been under the care of the VA for some years. He had been exposed to Agent Orange, and he woke up sick one day, and he asked his son to take him to the VA, and his son did so. And when the son arrived at the VA, the son took his father, Lawrence Sinan is his name, I might add, and the son's name was Terrell Green, and Terrell took Lawrence, drove up to the valet, which was there to serve ER patients, emergency room patients, and others, and said, "My dad is very ill. Help, help." And the valet said, "I can't help you. Go inside and speak with the ER receptionist." He went inside and he said, I paraphrase, "Of course, my dad is very ill. Help." The woman got up and sauntered to the back, and some time elapsed. And she said, I can't help you. Go to the back, to the ambulance bay." So he drove to the ambulance bay, and there were two ambulance attendants there, and he jumped out and he said, "Help me, my dad is very ill, help me." The ambulance attendant says, "We can't help you. Call for the ER. So while they're playing these games, and while nobody wants to become involved, Terrell, the ambulance attendants tell Terrell to move out of the ambulance bay. He does so. He's waiting. 25 minutes went by. Essentially, poor Lawrence Sinan died like a dog in the parking lot as his son was begging for help.
Yeah, and literally the house, it was only, three or four miles away from the VA, so when his father had called
for help. It was 5 minutes away.
He went there right immediately.
Away,
so
maximum.
This is the closest hospital for care, and he's already a Vietnam Agent Orange exposed vet with a presumptive medical problems.
And then on top of it, may I just say this about that, and we'll go into greater discussion of this later, but this hits on what we know is routine practice with the VA. The VA then manipulated the records and lied outright and destroyed all evidence of the CCTV footage that was recording all of this, because I filed a Freedom of Information Act request on behalf of Terrell, requesting the CCTV footage, and of course all of the records. After review of the records, we found that the CCTV footage, which showed Terrell at each of these places begging for help, had been destroyed. This, I might add, is a violation of federal law, because this facility comes under the auspices of Homeland Security. It's a federal facility because it's a joint VA and active service facility. So they violated the regulations of Homeland Security, but they didn't mean anything to them. And they altered the record to state that Terrell had driven his father from Wisconsin. And they altered the record so that it appeared as though Lawrence was dead upon arrival. They then went so far as to take his corneas without appropriate consent. They stole his wedding ring and left this family a wreck. I might add, the attorney who is handling this litigation will be featured on our program.
Yeah, this is a staggering. So, I mean, we're looking at all this happen. Now, obviously, Veterans Day was Tuesday yesterday. We're pre-recording on Wednesday today. And all I kept hearing all over the place, and it was every place you turned around, well, thank the vet. But then they have no idea what any of us or what any of the veterans did or went through or what they did supposedly in the name as a member of the military. But then what is more astonishing, it bothers me, I mean, absolutely rips me apart, and this is why I've had flashbacks now for 20-some hours, is the fact that they all abandon the veteran. So when the veteran needs help to get to medical care, they can't get there. We need somebody to come and pick them up, they can't get it. Denise, how many cases over the years, you've been doing this for 25 years, how many cases have you run into where people have specifically asked for help and the veteran VA denied the help even when they were required to do it by their own guidelines? I mean, there's something wrong with this.
You know, Doug, we all know that it's ongoing. There's vets every day speaking out about needing care, having problems getting in. You know, the ability to get a compensation claim through. This has been going on for decades, let's be honest. Decades.
But you know something, Denise? The public at large really does not know. The public at large knows that there were highly publicized hearings starring Bernie Sanders and others. And there was an enormous ballyhoo, and we know that the deputy, Chinsinki, was resigned, and we know there's a new person. That's what the public at large knows. What the public at large knows about Veterans Day, unfortunately, is barbecue sales. The veterans have become so trivialized that the big deal about Veterans Day now is a Veterans Day sale. And you see signs that say Happy Veterans Day, not honor the veterans, but Happy Veterans Day, as though there's anything to rejoice about Veterans Day.
You know,
the
veterans,
bottom line is that we know it because we've been on, you know, in the trenches for years and years. But the public at large, and I'm sure many people listening, are not fully aware of the fact that, unfortunately, our soldiers are considered to be cannon fodder, and it's cheaper, this is dreadful to say, but it's cheaper to bury them in the VA's mind than to treat them. And that's the bottom line.
You know, when you look at the whole philosophy of everything, one thing I've ran into and we've ran into, this is going back to the Vietnam War when I got first involved and all of us got involved originally, is the fact that the VA doctors and then the leaders are all disavowing the connection. So even when the veteran goes in sick with the documentation, they disavow the documentation exists. Now, the other thing, and this goes back to our medical and our professional training, all three of us are in a different age group. We're all the same age here. But at that time, you not only did your job from 8 to 5, but you had the responsibility to do continuing medical education or whatever your professional education was, outside of your work hours. I mean, Denise, when you were teaching nursing and working as an active nurse all the time, you just didn't do it from 8 to 5 or whatever your shift was, did you?
No.
But they're still required,
you know,
as a licensed nurses and so forth, are still required to continue to engage in continuing education units, CEU, but please go on.
Yeah, Denise, go on. Don't interrupt her.
Yeah, what I was going to say is I have to, you know, say that I want the VA corrected, okay? I do not want to go away from the VA. It needs to be fixed. And to say do away with it and send people to civilian doctors that don't have the training or education about wartime exposures is wrong, too. We have to set up a
system. I disagree with you, but go on.
We have to set up a system that it's guaranteed that education on exposures to hazardous materials is commonplace, not unusual. And what is happening is that it is not covered in medical schools or nursing school of what happens when you have toxic exposures. So whether it's depleted uranium, whether it's pesticides, whether it's nerve agent, there is no guaranteed training. There's no algorithm, you know, of what you go through in testing and diagnosing and a standard of procedure. There is none of that in the civilian life.
There's none of this in the VA either, though, dear. That's why we're having the problem.
VA,
and there are toxicologists, civilian toxicologists, who are in fact dealing with organophosphates and so forth. So in fact, none of that is happening in the VA. You know that, and I
and
know
what
that.
I'm saying,
they're not educated.
Is there needs to be leadership to say one of the main problems is not so much amputations, not so much the traumatic injuries, but toxic exposures in a wartime situation or even peacetime, because we have bases that have been contaminated. The VA needs to take a lead. It needs to take a pure, change the culture completely and look at that as a problem instead of hiding from it. And until we do that, there is not enough doctors out there in the civilian world that have the knowledge to meet the needs of these veterans. And that's what we need to push for.
Many of the doctors serving the VA, you know this as well as I, are doctors that are not able to make it in the civilian world. So they're not even the same cut of physician that you would encounter in the civilian world. Doctors in the VA are exempt from personal litigation. They are personally exempt from charges of malpractice. That means they can do whatever the hell they want to because the Federal Tort Claims Act protects them. And on top of that, as you speak of changing the culture, we can't change the culture. Some of those people have been there 20 and 30 years, 10 years, 5 years. As soon as they come in, they are inculcated by their peers to believe that the veteran is nothing but garbage, that their clientele is nothing but a royal pain in the tuchus, so to speak. There's no way to change that culture. The best way to change that culture is to abolish it. And I want you to know, I deal face-to-face with these doctors all the time in the VA. And I know full well that these doctors would not be conducting themselves this way if they were civilians. Civilian physicians have to protect themselves against malpractice. So, in fact, what they do is order more tests than are required. There's a great controversy around this. If, in fact, VA doctors were held to the same standard as the VA, I can assure you that a great percentage of the malpractice that is routine throughout the VA would not be going on.
Now, hold on, Patricia, hold on. Just listen for a second. I understand what you're saying. But Denise is absolutely right, because as we work in the civilian world and work with those doctors trying to get care there, because so those are the people that are retired, we have the ability not only to go to the VA, but we can go to TRICARE. So Denise and I, as retired officers, fully retired officers, we can also get our TRICARE. That's
you can go to civilian physicians.
Totally
TRICARE will pay for anything.
Now, the problem you run into there, and this is where Denise is absolutely correct, they're so busy with their standard care and their primary care that they neither have the knowledge or the desire or the intent, and this is what you see happening all over the place with Medicare, to even look at the stuff. So you have to have a doctor.
Yes, but let me tell you something. Remember that I conduct a patient advocacy project for civilians called the People's Advocate, and also a not-for-profit law project. So do let me tell you this. Medicare recipients and beneficiaries can go to any physician without a referral. This is presuming that they do not have a supplemental program that requires them to use a gatekeeper or an HMO program. A recipient of Medicare and a recipient of TRICARE, for that matter, can go to any physician at any time. And a responsible primary care physician will refer a person who says they've been exposed to toxins to a toxicologist. There are toxicologists.
Internists. Because you're not going to find those out here in the rural hinterlands. We don't have them down here, and we've got a university med school here. We don't have
but
that.
But guess what? Wait a minute here. If you're saying that, then you're saying that no one is going to be treated properly at Rantoul as well, because the VA turns to these civilian experts. You know that as well as I. So the bottom line is this, that what if in fact it came to pass that the VA was abolished, and I will stand firm on that, and I will argue that till the cows come home, because I deal with this every day on an ongoing basis, face-to-face with all of these doctors, day in and day out. I review my clients' medical records. It could be thousands of pages. And I look to see what they have had the benefit of, what diagnostic protocol they've had the benefit of. By and large, a diagnostic protocol in the VA, if you're lucky if you can get a urinalysis and a CBC. You have to fight like a fiend to get that. Whereas in the civilian realm, this is only for instance, you go to a physician and the first thing they're going to do is a CBC and a urinalysis. That's just an aside. So my point is, and I don't mean take me as playing devil's advocate if you want to. All I'm saying to you is this, even today, even this morning, I dealt 3 hours with the care of a veteran who has PTSD. And I'm telling you that if he had been able to receive the appropriate care through a civilian care provider, he would have been a hell of a lot better off than he is right now. And
you know,
this is true.
When you look at a civilian care provider, and all of us have worked with them and talked with them, you start, as Denise is right, and I totally agree with her 100%, is that civilian care provider who's never been in the military has no concepts. So when we look at PTSD, and I'm totally confirmed from my own experience and what we've worked with and responded to, PTSD is a function of three things. The old battle casualty, shell shock, whatever you have. That's where you go from tranquility to terror in a nanosecond, and you go back and forth so you never know where you're at. So your body, the response mechanism of your body is totally messed up. The other thing, and this is where it comes into play, and Denise has been instrumental at the CDC or getting this done, and again with the research that you've been trying to get done, is to get these protocols in place to where they look at the neurophysiology and what is happening to the brain, the entire physiological system that affects it. It's not a mental illness. And then the other thing, which we've all been instrumental in putting together, is this whole concept of moral injury. Now, PBS, WIL at the University of Illinois had an entire afternoon show yesterday on moral injury and really got into it. But again, at the same time, what they totally acknowledge is nobody in the Department of Defense, nobody in the VA is going to formally acknowledge moral injury, because then it puts the whole, you know, ball of wax right into their thing. And when you talk to a civilian doctor, and I've been to them, and going back to the Vietnam days, those guys don't have a clue what's involved in the military, and for even to try and communicate and give the lingo to them, this is impossible. I mean, Denise, when you were involved with treatment and assessment at the CDC conference, correct?
Yeah. Well, I want to bring this up. I've been to civilian doctors. And
I might interject one thing. The person who is premier in moral injury is not a veteran, by the way. But go on.
Patricia, just be quiet and let Denise. Go ahead, Denise.
All I'm saying is I've been to many civilian doctors, and some of them, like the ones that have branched out into environmental health, or integrative medicine, which are considered fringe elements in medicine, know what's going on. The common doctor does not know. You mention a depleted uranium, or you mention sarin, or you mention the problem with the pills, the protostigmine bromide pills, or the vaccines that may not be as pure as what we need them to be. They don't know, and that is a fact. I've had other people trying to go to Mayo and everything else to get the best. Well, Mayo may know, but not everybody has access.
You know, Denise, when you were sitting there and we were down to the CDC and you're working with Andres Carnegie Both and some of the other really good doctors, and then we're working with the guys in Texas, they were really, really adamant about the need for the entire thing, the correlation between looking at all the physiological systems in the body and how all this stuff affects everything and the synergistic nature. But even they, I know they were having, Bill was having such incredible problems of getting even the civilian medical authorities to listen to him.
And that's continued. Our doctors are not trained, And you will hear that. And what I was about to say is, you know, saying that they can go to any doctor and Medicare will take them and all that, that is not exactly true, because doctors are kind of starting to refuse to take Medicare patients because they're not paid as much.
They're refusing it around here. They won't take them.
Yeah. So being able to get care through a civilian doctor is not going to work. I mean, they've got to turn around the VA. And our new secretary, I have to hand it to him. He has been busy for, I think, roughly maybe 90 days now. He is out there recruiting doctors. He said in all the public affairs talks that he's done that, you know, he's trying to recruit 28,000 healthcare, mainly doctors. And so by doing that and saying that he's got the immediate that he's got to get rid of, I think 38 another 1,000 that he wants to deal with, that have not abided by the principles of the VA. So this is a process that's happened over time. For decades, the Agent Orange vets weren't taken care of appropriately. We have a situation where the VA does not handle case by case and look at that, despite presumptives, there's other situations that come up, that rare cancers that are not being covered. And so we need a complete change. I don't believe in doing away with the VA, but I do believe that the man in charge now has the ability, whether he has the right legal steps that he can take to really change things quickly is another item to consider, because all federal employees have the right to appeals. Whether they're with the FAA or whether they're with whatever agency, there is legal rights, and they have to finish an investigation before they can fire a person.
Now, I know right here at Danville, and we've talked to those doctors that we've had complaints with that have caused problems, they have been canned. So we've got five that have been sent packing from Danville alone that we had massive complaints on. So that we are seeing some headway. I mean, I'm seeing that on a daily basis, but at the same time, we're still seeing this massive, massive education problem.
Yes, it is an education problem, and it starts because doctors are not trained in the medical area. And for Patricia to say that there's toxicologists available, there's not that many toxicologists in the U.S., and, you know, I know we questioned that once with the VA and said, how many toxicologists do you have employed? They have one. Okay? Not appropriate. And, yes, I'm angry. And Patricia's very angry. We're all very angry because this shouldn't be happening. But when the system has been left to decay and not move forward with the best science and the best medical care, you know, it's going to take some time to turn this around. The Gulf War illness is just an example. And what we've been able to do with the little bit of money that we've gotten is every study that has come out on Gulf War, using the best scientific principles, we are nailing down that the damage is there. That was never done before. It was never done before to show what's wrong in the body and how do we fix it. We have dedicated people out there that are making a difference. We have one MEG machine in the VA system. There's 20 out there in the country that they could do the brain mapping in like 10 minutes to show where the damage is different from PTSD, from traumatic injury to a chemical injury.
Now, you just went out to California for a couple weeks of testing set up through the War Injuries Clinic out there. Could you explain a little bit what was involved and what the outcomes have been or where it's at?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that because their workup was really good. And the problem that I'm seeing now is that they start with doing the neurocognitive, which we all have that problem, okay? Cognitive issues are pretty well up there with pain. So they're trying to attack the symptoms that we have and find a way to treat it. Now, what they were doing with complete workup, neurocognitive, then MRI, a PET scan, blood work, and then they started the treatment. Now, whether the treatment's going to be effective is another question, and I don't know, because they're running the study with a sham, which is the, you don't get a real treatment, but if, you know, the machine knows, and then the others get the real treatment. They're trying to get a large number through, like 200 and something. They've only gotten 20 so far. We have to support them in doing that. But the other thing that I found out while I was out there is right up the road in San Francisco, in San Francisco, VA, Dr. Chow, who's got a good handle on it, is doing MRIs and neurocognitive. And what they need to do is have a system that the patient, the person that goes in and signs up for this research, is allowed to say, I want the studies for MRI or PET scans to be shared with other researchers looking at it, so they have a larger population. Right now, I can't do the San Francisco study because it just went through neurocognitive testing and, you know, had everything done. And, you know, they want to wait a year so that I don't remember their tests for neurocognitive, you know. And I go, well, that's no problem, because you could do it again the next day and I probably wouldn't remember the answers any better than I did the first time.
No, that's one of the big problems with that stuff. I know when I was up at the Warren Clinic in Washington, D.C. with Kelly, and we're doing all these neuropsychological testing and everything, not only did we have the problems with the short-term memory, not long-term, but the short-term memory and trying to remember what was happening, but then we had all of the neuropathies and the other problems, so you've got all these fine motor control problems and balance problems that are interfering with this stuff, and that creates a nightmare. I mean, how many doctors and nurses, Denise, could you give a guess that have to quit practicing medicine in one form or another because of their physiological effects going to war? I mean, staggering numbers, isn't it?
Right. I run across nurses and doctors all the time that had to step out of their professional field because they were sick. So, you know, the ones that have experienced it, they need to listen to us and listen to what we're saying as goals, like education program. And, you know, for example, all the meetings I've gone to with the researchers at the Research Advisory Committee, and they have the researchers come in and present. I've been yelling since day one, webinar, live webinar, require doctors to, you know, sit there and listen to it, or, you know, archive them so that they can go back and do that, write a continuing education that they do this program and become to understand what research is showing and open up their knowledge factor. Doug, you got referred for your eyes. I want to talk about that, okay? Were they able at your facility to know what was going on with your eyes?
Absolutely not. In every case, you know, what I did, because, again, I had all the documents in my hand, which you guys have all seen, and so I had the documents at my fingertips confirming the physiological effects, so when the VA doctor looked at it, and then I picked up another one from the University of Illinois Med School, they're looking at it going, we can't handle this. And so, as you both know, they sent me on down to Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, which is what, one of the great medical treatment facilities in the world. And down there, they were staggered, and they weren't even sure what to do with to take care of it.
That's what I wanted to talk about. You got referred to Barnes. And I don't know of any research that they've started, but they certainly should, to look at this.
Well, they did immediately because, you know, we were meeting with everybody. It wasn't just meeting with the doctor. It was kind of like, we got to go through this and figure out what's happening, because they were seeing it. And the doctor that really referred me, Dr. Betty Anderson from the U of I in Champaign, Illinois, she was seeing it on the chemically toxic exposure out of the pesticide industry, you know, the farming industry. And so she recognized it immediately and knew there was something seriously wrong. Now, with this latest batch of cataract surgery on the right eye, what is happening, Denise, I know this doesn't surprise you at all because we talked about this years ago, they removed the radiation cataract, and then it normally takes, after cataract removal, a week to 2 weeks and your eye stabilized out where you can get glasses. Because of the radiation damage, I'm still waiting for the right eye to stabilize and knock out to where they're going to get a prescription and issue new glasses. So I couldn't go back teaching. Reading is a nightmare. And, you know, just anything to do, and because I can see well enough and the old glasses work, but they're not where they need to be. And there's nobody out there that knows it.
And how many others have gotten referred to Barnes so that they have the ability to look at this and write a paper so that others know?
Very few, I doubt. The only reason I got it, because I had all the documents and I knew what I was talking about, and I could shove it up where the sun didn't shine. So what they were going is, well, we're going to give Doug and his friends that he's helping their direct care to get them to shut up and go away. So it's sort of like, we'll give you the carrot if you'll stop doing it. And, I mean, Denise, you were involved in conversations directly with the Department of Defense, Michael Kilpatrick and Daxon and Cherry, where they wanted all of Bowers Raiders to come back home and work for them.
Right.
I mean, here they're going to you as our team nurse, as a woman, trying to get you to get all of Bowers Raiders to shut up and quit telling the truth and come back home, and they'd give us everything we wanted for the rest of our lives if we'd lie for them again. I mean...
No, and, you know, the example with your eyes, and this is happening to other vets. They're seeing this happen. They can't get any answers at the VA. They're not getting referred to Barnes. So, you know, here's a problem that we need to take to headquarters and say, people with eye problems need to be being referred to Barnes, and you cover the cost, VA. And, you know, have Barnes do whatever educational program to get the news out to other specialists in eye care. It's an area that's been neglected.
That's what they did at Barnes when I was down there. They were calling in all, hey, Doug, you know, we don't mind if we use you as a teaching point. So when I was down there for every appointment, the same thing for surgery, they were bringing others went in to look and see and understand what was happening. But again, that's rare. Your average vet out there that doesn't know what's happening, having these complex problems, all synergistic in nature, they're confused and everything. They don't know what's going on. They don't understand the language, much less communicate the language. And then, as you know, because you've been involved in this ad nauseum, the doctors don't even understand the language or the terminology to where they can even effectively provide treatment in too many cases.
And, you know, what I have to say to you, you've got to stay in touch with Barnes and get them to make an official publication, you know, and get it published so that other doctors that are reading their journals see this as a case example and for them to talk about the others that they are seeing. Until we get this knowledge out there, we're all hurting. And to say that you can go to a civilian doctor and get care, they're going to shake their head and go, I don't know what I'm seeing.
Now, with the pyridostigmine bromide, I remember I was on the phone with you. You were up in a hearings in Washington, D.C., when we totally confirmed in the Army medical manuals that pyridostigmine bromide was a known medical problem, there was a nerve agent itself, and didn't, during that hearing, the military and the VA just try to toss that out?
Yes, they did. And that was despite Dr. Gallum's RAND study that pretty well spells it out. So, you know, we've had the DOD blocking us. The VA, as I call it, is the next one down. I mean, they're, you know, in size as large as the DOD, if not larger. And, you know, we've got to have an educational program out there for all doctors, starting with the VA as the lead. And that's what we need to get across to our new secretary, is that this is a problem. Not only is he understaffed with doctors that care and do the right thing and not live by bonus and doing, you know, things that should be just automatic fire. But, you know, if we cannot turn around the VA system, there's no hope out there in the civilian world to get it turned around.
Now, I guess that comes back to the veterans. Everybody is yelling, thank a veteran, but they have no idea what the veteran did. They usually are not involved unless they listen to the program or we've all worked with them or they become sick themselves if they go and look for the information. So the general public has no concept or any idea of what's really happening. And then as we both know, and I mean, you pointed out to me, you and I were walking a hill going from congressional office and U.S. Senate office to office, and we had a Department of Defense bag man going either before us or after us, trying to squash the information. I mean, when you pointed that out to me, I was just, you know, oh, my God, what's happened here? I mean, this is what I believed and what I thought and what I dreamed was happening. And you taught me something totally different.
Well, and I was there when doctors were getting fired. I mean, Kathleen Leisure-Murray, who was an expert in leishmaniasis, one of our parasitic diseases, you know, she ended up losing her job with the VA. Bill Bonswiger went under a full-fledged attack for trying his best to get the word out. We had a coroner down in Houston that ruled that, you know, a death was related to Gulf War illness and, you know, her service in the Gulf War. They ended up firing her. We had the DU studies up in Canada. The DOD went up and really threatened that if you continue this research and opening the door, then, you know, we're going to not give you any grants from the U.S. government to do any other research.
In that report, the Canadian report, Bob Cherry and Eric Jackson, two of the guys that have tried to squash us, figure mainly as the reviewers of the report to squash information.
Right. Well, it sounds like the music is coming up, and I think we lost Patricia on the problem with the phones.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to say that we have a lot of work to do. We need the vets to do as much as they can in speaking up, writing their letters to the secretary, to the health benefits people, and speak up and tell them what they're going through. And that's hard to do when you have neurocognitive problems.
Well, thank you, Denise. Thanks for coming on again. God bless everything. Thank you, Gary Noll, for helping us and getting the information out. Thanks, Patricia. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And remember, let's take care of the vets.